Angie's List is now Angie, your home for everything home. Angie still has the same top pros and reviews you've counted on for more than 20 years, only now you'll also get access to all the tools you need to make your home a happy place. Inside, outside, big or small, Angie helps you find the right solution for whatever you need done, all from your phone. It's simple to find upfront pricing and instantly book hundreds of projects. You can even search pricing guides to see what others paid for similar jobs and easily compare quotes from top local pros to make sure you're getting a fair price. From lawn care to repairing the AC to the project of your dreams, Angie has your home projects handled from start to finish. Plus, when you book and pay through Angie, they'll cover your project up to the full purchase price plus limited damage protection with their happiness guarantee. Make your home an Angie home. Check out Angie.com today. And for more on the happiness guarantee, go to Angie.com/happiness-guarantee.htm.
Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Kelly Spillman talks about thwarting a robbery while working at Subway.
This was my first job my freshman year at Florida State at Subway. I noticed that this car was out front and there were two men in the front seat. And I look at them and both men are looking right at me. And in that moment, I realized we're about to get robbed.
Today on the show, Kelly Spillman tells a hilarious story about thwarting a robbery while working at Subway. Stay close.
Hey, this is Kelly Spillman. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with musician Leisure McCorkle. Leisure McCorkle. Have you ever heard of Leisure McCorkle, Kelly?
No.
Yeah, well, you're going to. You heard it here first. He's a really, really talented guy. And I got to tell you, man, he's a good friend of my buddy John Thomas Griffith, who does the soundtrack for Storyworthy. And I've known John Thomas for like 20 years. So he calls me out of the blue and just says, listen, Leisure is coming down to LA. He's going to be playing at the Dresden. You have to have him on your show. And anyway, when a good friend like John Thomas asks me to have somebody on, then I do. And he was not wrong, because Leisure McCorkle was very entertaining. You guys go back, listen to Leisure's story about being in Liverpool, England, playing the Cavern Club. You know that famous club where the Beatles played?
Wow.
And then running into Noel Gallagher and kind of being a part of a bar fight.
Wow.
It's a big story.
That's a big story.
Yeah. So go back, you guys, listen to that. But not today, because today I'm here with comedian Kelly Spillman, and she brings forth a topic: thwarting a robbery at Subway. It's a very specific topic.
Yes.
Which I love. And I've actually heard this story, so I know it's great. How long did you work at Subway, by the way?
I worked there for a few months.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never worked in a convenience store. Well, it's not a convenience store. Mm-hmm. It's a fast food restaurant. I never worked in fast food.
Oh, you missed out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's for the best, yeah. But...
I mean, I've worked in pizza joints, and I was a waitress for... ever. I waitress, if I added them up, it'd be like 18 restaurants. All sorts of restaurants, you know, whether it be German or Italian. I did French. I did Mexican. I worked in all sorts of restaurants, but I never did fast food.
Hmm.
Yeah. Do you like Subway?
I don't go there anymore.
Yeah, I bet. My ex-husband always told me that it was like really bad food. Like it was all processed and terrible for you. Is that true?
Well, it's interesting. When I worked there... Well, this was the time when Jared like dropped all that weight. So somehow Subway had this reputation as being like the healthy fast food. And I worked right on it. My Subway was right near my college campus. So we were packed all the time. But people somehow convinced themselves that it was healthy because you were getting all those vegetables on top of the sandwich.
Well, maybe it is in a way, in terms of it's not like a fried thing.
Right.
And you can say no cheese.
Right.
I mean, at least it could be like... Like the bread would be fattening, I guess, but mm-hmm. the rest of Subway could work. I don't know. Anyway, I'm anxious to hear the story thwarting a robbery. It sounds terrifying. And that would be, I mean, you know, it's like when I was a flight attendant, we were taught like how to deal with if you know, if there was a hijacker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is in the 80s and 90s. So it was before 9/11. So it was, you know, very different. But we were supposed to like make friends with a hijacker so that we could get information that then to give to the pilot, then they would give it to the ground. So we were supposed to say things like, what's a bomb look like? Where do you even keep a bomb? And then we're supposed to get them to like show us, and then we're going to, you know, take this information in and like, okay, what's the detonator? What's the explosive?
Oh, wow.
Are there wires? Yeah, I know. But we're like goofball flight attendants.
Right.
I mean, we weren't trained. I mean, we were trained, but it was in a really, like the way we were supposed to fight off a hijacker, again, this is pre-9/11, is give them as much to drink as possible in terms of water and sodas mm-hmm. so that they would have to go to the bathroom. So they would go to the bathroom and you know what I mean?
Right.
Like when I was trained as a flight attendant, we were taught to deal with these people like we would be compromising.
Right.
And I don't think they're taught that anymore.
No.
No, I think now they're taught to like put the cart in front of the cockpit and, you know, bar the entry into the
right.
cockpit. And now there's no more like cockpit key.
No.
Like, there used to be a key. We would just go into the cockpit when we wanted to. And I think that's all over.
Right.
Anyway, so then you're at Subway and I'm anxious to hear about like, are you supposed to push a button? Or are you supposed to, you know, you're not armed.
Nope. Okay. Not at all.
Well, I'm very anxious to hear this. And listen, you do a lot of storytelling here in Los Angeles, like
I do.
Mm-hmm. And then you also do a lot of comedy because mm-hmm. you are, like, first and foremost, a comic, right?
I am a stand-up comic,
yes. From Atlanta. And so here you are in L.A. What do you prefer, storytelling or comedy?
It's interesting. My identity for years was a stand-up comic, and right. I kind of fell into storytelling in L.A., and there's audiences and they want to hear what you have to say. So it's just kind of been this magical accidental thing I stumbled into that I've just kind of fallen in love with. But yeah. My identity still, in all honesty, I, you know, identify as a stand-up comedian.
Yeah. Cause I just started doing stand-up again. And like personally on the stage, I'd much rather be a comic because I feel there's more, reaction from the audience and I get more approval because the laughs come faster. Whereas when I'm telling a story, I mean, I'm still trying to craft it so that
right.
it's tight and funny, but sometimes it just gets kind of long and I wanted just to get to the funny. I don't know. It's a different beast.
It is. It is.
But when I go to a storytelling show, if somebody gets on stage and they're not good, I am not happy. Because I know 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes ahead of me, and I don't want that.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Comedians, at least, are going to be off in 4 minutes.
Right. And if you don't like this joke, maybe their next joke will be funny.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
So there's just so many amateurs doing storytelling.
That's true. I personally find the stand-up shows to be much more horrific to sit through.
I know.
And I think part of it is just we in LA, it's so hard to have audiences at our stand-up shows, whereas storytelling, they're just such, you know, so many people show up to listen to us. So I think it's a little bit easier to win over the audience.
Yeah, it depends. It depends because I've done so many storytelling shows as well. But sometimes if the audience is a lot older, you know, like some of the suburban crowds,
yes.
as it were. Now you're getting into people over 70, more of an NPR crowd.
Yes.
More of a serious crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't, in my experience, use your comedic wherewithal the way you would as a comic because
yes.
they're not going to be on board. They want it slower.
Right.
They want a little touch of the Minnesota guy. Who's that? You know. They want a little
Lake
more
Wobegon,
prairie.
Yeah, Prairie Home little, Companion.
They want a little more of that.
Yes, you're right.
And what do you think?
Trying to think. Yeah, I definitely have had that experience sometimes. But even it actually hurts me a little bit more as a stand-up comedian when it's older. Yeah, I have this bit where I'm trying to convince men to stop dating beautiful women. So I have all these reasons for them to try to date a 5 instead of a 9. And it usually does so well, but I was at the show and I couldn't see the audience that well. But most of them were in their 60s and 70s, and they just were not feeling Data 5 at all. And so none of my stand-up stuff was really working on them.
I mean, I got to tell you, you go out to do stand-up comedy and the audience is under 30. You go out to do storytelling and there's a very good chance the audience is over 60.
Yes, that's true.
That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough.
I mean, it is tough.
I'm just saying, I guess for me, it's just you get yourself in a different frame of mind. It's a different skill.
It is, for sure.
Yeah, that's not a bad thing.
No, I think stories and jokes, we desperately want them to be universal. We want to be able to walk in any room and have it hit. But, you know, the reality is that just isn't the case a lot of times. So you have to have stuff in your back pocket and know who you're telling the story to.
It's so nuanced.
Right.
If it weren't nuanced, then you would always hit it out of the ballpark.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. You'll have to come on and play Story Smash as well.
I want to do it so bad.
I keep wanting you to do that show.
I
want to
do it. I can't wait.
It's really funny. I've had on some really top stand-up comedians blow it, like completely blow it.
Yes.
Because they are not prepared for that beast of storytelling.
They're not.
And then I've had storytellers who have no stand-up experience kill.
Right.
So it's really a funny show. It sort of puts comedians in their place because they realize, like, oh, shit, this is not just based on a laugh.
Right.
I need something under this, and I need to show some vulnerability, and I need, I need to get them on the side to like me more than just make them laugh.
Right.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I find the best storytelling is when people show their mistakes and stuff like that.
Right.
Or it's one tip anyway.
Right.
There's a lot. There's a lot.
Part of your show is improvised as well, right?
Well, right. So the people that come on Story Smash know 12 of the topics going in. They know 12 topics. There's one space that says free, so then they can choose any of those 12 topics. But three spaces say audience. And if they land on audience, then we throw it out to the audience, and they suggest stories, and then the expert judges choose one to be the topic.
Right.
So that's when everything kind of goes haywire.
Right.
It's damn fun, though.
Well, and a lot of stand-ups actually are not very good improvisers, and people assume that they can just always be funny on the spot.
Yeah.
But that's not always the case at all.
And that being said, one of my first thoughts about Story Smash, when it used to be called Chuck on Storyworthy, you know, because I've had this game since 2011, one of my first thoughts was to do it at Improv Olympic. And I did do it at Improv Olympic for about a year, maybe a year and a half, because I thought the kids in the improv school would be so good at it.
Right.
Wrong.
Really?
And they didn't do well at all because they need a topic, they need a situation, they need a date and time and place to go to perform. So they need to be somebody to scream out, Russia, bakery, grandma,
right,
car accident or something.
So they need to create things, not talk about their personal experiences.
Oh, yeah. Improvisers have nothing. It's nothing to do with them. It's
not
personal at all.
Right.
So that didn't work. And so I went back to comics. So it was like comics, then I went to improvisers, and now I'm back to comedians. And actually now I'm back to storytellers/comedians, which is the perfect blend.
That is.
That's what you are.
Well, hooray. Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here, Kelly. All right, you guys, we're going to get to Kelly's story in just a second. But before we do, I wanted to remind you to follow me on Twitter and Instagram. That's simple, at Storyworthy. I'm not complicated, you know. I don't ask a lot. And also, you guys, check out my other show, ScrewedUpStories.com with Rachel O'Brien. We're having a great time over there on Westwood One Podcast. And check us out. I think you're going to really like that show as well. And then, of course, always subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff. And it's all free. Yes, we know this. It's all free. All right, you guys, she's here right now. Like I said, Kelly Spillman. She started her comedy career in Atlanta, and then you've performed all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go on tours, or would you go on like direct dates for the weekend? Or
yes, I wish I could do huge tours, but sometimes I have been able to get in at some clubs across the country and book like a weekend here and there. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's the best. And then you're also a resident comic at Laughing Skull Comedy. Where's
that? Well, I was in Atlanta, so it's kind of a big deal. It's a comedy club in Atlanta, and they pick one comic a month, so there's 12 a year, and you get to do every single show for the month. And so you get to perform on every show with four different headliners.
Amazing.
So it's an amazing experience. And
do they still do that?
They still do that.
That's amazing.
So it was a really big deal.
That's
in
fantastic.
My opinion.
Yes. Yeah, it is. Do you miss Atlanta?
I do miss Atlanta.
What do you miss?
Well, there were chances to perform a lot at clubs there. And so even though you would do to prepare kind of these, all these bar shows to just other comics, you know, you would have a couple of real, you know, dates at real clubs. So I like that. I had more opportunities there.
Yeah. Cause you were and the big fish in the small
I was
pond.
The big fish, or a big fish. Yeah. And, the cost, you know, my 1000 square foot, one bedroom condo was a third of what my rent is here. So yeah. it, that, you know, the cost of living yeah. makes it a little bit easier to, pursue this. And, but also it is nice to go back. I'm able to get on a lot of shows as an LA comic who used to be from Atlanta.
Yeah, of course.
So I don't know that I would be able to get on some of the shows that I do get on now. So there is something I'm very fortunate that I can do that.
Do you have family back there?
I do. My sister and her husband and children. So yes, I go to visit them and stay with them whenever I'm in town.
You guys can find Kelly over there on Twitter at Kelly_Spellman and also at your website, kellyspellman.com. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Kelly Spellman.
So I could not have asked for a better manager at Subway. Greg, he was just the coolest guy. This was my first job, my freshman year at Florida State. And he remembered all the classes I was taking. So like when we were making the tuna and cutting the veggies, he would ask me about the classes. And he was just really knowledgeable. So he would like tell me what movies to rent from Blockbuster that were really good. And, you know, we talked about political current events and he like laughed at my jokes. And he noticed right away that I was excelling at my sandwich artist duty. So he kept giving me like more responsibilities. So I would take care of a lot of the catering orders. I would open the store on my own. And the big thing was when he would take a day off, I would always fill him in on all the Subway shenanigans that had gone down, like just everything he missed. I'd make sure he knew. And it honestly would have been the perfect job, except for my coworker, Angela. Angela was the worst. She was blissfully dumb. She talked nonstop, but knew nothing. So like anytime a song would be playing, she would just scream like, "I love REM." And it was Depeche Mode. Every time I would remind her, every time. She never learned how to cut the footlong in half. If you ordered a 6-inch, you got a 3-inch sandwich or a 9-inch sandwich every time. She was always ranting about things. One day she was going on and on about how evil Canada is and was saying they were a communist country. And I go, "Angela, what are you talking about?" She goes, "They run over their people with tanks." And I go, "Angela, that is China. Please read a book, Angela." She always was sick and had migraines. So one time on game day at Florida State, the line was out the door. She just laid on the ground moaning, and I had to step over her for 4 hours making sandwiches and ringing everything in. So one night when I was working, Greg left the store with Angela. And my other coworker, Autumn, goes, "Look who's leaving with his mistress." And I go, "Autumn, that's not even funny. Like, Greg is a good guy." I had met Greg's wife. She's this beautiful, successful architect. And Autumn goes, "Kelly, why would a 37-year-old man leave the store with an 18-year-old at 10 p.m.? And I go, "Autumn, obviously, he's firing her. She is the worst Subway employee in the history of Subway. But Greg is such a decent guy, he's going to do it outside, not to embarrass her in front of us." And it really bothered me because he was such a good guy. And, you know, I just think sometimes people like to create drama or make things like a Jerry Springer situation. And like I said, I'd met his wife. She's beautiful, successful architect. And she goes, "Kelly, they leave together all the time late at night." And I just, I didn't know Autumn that well. And I just was convinced she was just kind of creating fake gossip. Now, while this was going on, I look outside where we were next to an oil change place. And we were the only two stores there. And it's 10 o'clock on a Sunday night.
What city is this?
This is Tallahassee, Florida.
Tallahassee.
In Tallahassee. And so, you know, this is 1992. And so I noticed that this car, while all this was going down, was out front. And there were two men in the front seat. So I just mentioned Autumn. I'm like, this is so weird. Those guys have been sitting there a while. So I kind of walk over and I said, I'm going to go wash off the tables and check this out. So I was wiping off the tables and I look at them and both men are looking right at me. And in that moment, I realized we're about to get robbed. And I slowly just walk back, you know, behind and I, you know, whisper to Autumn, we're about to be robbed. And in that moment, we both at the same time just started to look very busy. Like we started baking bread, even though we're about to close in 45 minutes. I started refilling the tomatoes, fluffing the lettuce. And I don't know if I thought like if they saw our strong work ethic, they would decide to invade Burger King instead. But I also started to slowly take some money out of the register. And I started, like, I hid some under the ham and I hid some in the potato chips. And I was trying to just keep being like really covert where they wouldn't see what I was doing. But I kept sneaking because I just decided, you know, if they're going to rob us, they're not going to get all of Subway's money. And so then I remembered, because at the time, if you went to Subway in 1992, you would know that we had this sticker program. And every sub you got a sticker. And if you had 12 stickers, you got a free foot-long sub. So the stickers were on the wall by the cash register, but they came in this huge roll. So there were like thousands of stickers. So I whispered to Autumn, I'm like, go over there and clean the tables again. I've got to get these stickers off the wall. And so Autumn is like, Kelly, don't do it. They are going to know that we're onto them.
Wait, but I'm like, you think they're after the stickers?
Yes, the money and the stickers. And I'm like, they can't get these. These are thousands of stickers. But Autumn's like, just let them have it. I don't want them to see you. So I'm like, go distract them. So I crawl on the floor and I get the stickers down because that would have been free Subway for years. Like, not on my watch. No way. There is no way I'm going to let them get like thousands of free subs. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. So I get the stickers in the walk-in cooler. And we only had these two dull little knives. So I started grabbing like anything I could, like for makeshift weapons. So we just have like big spoons and spatulas and I start hiding them. It's ridiculous. And see, the issue was Greg left with his keys. So we had a phone, but it was in his office and we didn't have a way to call the cops, you know, so there's no cell phones. So I keep thinking Greg's going to be back any minute. He's going to fire her. Once they see him, they're going to drive away. It's going to be fine. But he's not coming back. So Autumn whispers to me, because this point we're like 15 minutes in and they're still just staring at us. And every, you know, we would look up and take a sneak look. And so even she's like, when are we getting robbed? Like, what's going on? Why are these two men?
Yeah. Could you have locked the door?
Okay. It did not occur, not from the inside. So from the outside, and we didn't have the keys and we couldn't just run out screaming because then they could have like looted Subway and gotten everything. So it's like, I didn't feel like I could leave Subway unattended and I didn't have a way to lock it. So, and I keep thinking Greg is going to be back any minute. Yeah. So I notice that they've been just staring at us intensely for 15 minutes. Well, now both of them are starting to look behind them. And I go, Autumn, they have other people coming. Like, it hits me. They have accomplices coming, and this is why they haven't robbed us yet. And so Autumn says, you know, I think it now we realize, like, spatulas are not going to help us now against four men. And Greg hasn't come back. And I think we were being naive and we both realized that, you know, what are we going to do if four men run in here? So Autumn says, I'm going to run out and move my car to the, I'm going to act like I'm driving away, but I'm actually going to drive around back. And that way, if they burst in through the front, we have a getaway car in the back. And I'm like, Autumn, don't, like, no, it's too dangerous, Autumn. Don't do this. And she's like, Kelly, this is the only way we're going to survive this. So Autumn goes out. I see her walk to her. I'm so scared they're going to grab her. And then she gets in her car and she drives away. And that's when I realize she may have driven home and left me here alone. And now this is when I really start to panic, because I kept thinking, if they come in, they're just going to ask for the money. We'll give them the little I left in the register and they'll leave. But this is when it hit me. It may not be this easy. And I don't really know what they're going to do to me. I don't know what they have.
Are there cameras in the store?
No.
There's
no security cameras. No. No. You know, and no security cameras. No way for me to call the cops. The oil change place is closed. Usually we were busy. Not a soul, of course, in this 20 minutes has walked in to buy a sandwich. We're usually really packed. So Autumn said she was going to say a password and not to open the door unless she said the password. And I was like, Autumn, I can't. What if they've got you hostage in the back door, the accomplices? And she goes, do not open this door unless I say the password. So I'm waiting by the back door. I mean, I'm just freaking out. I don't know what has happened. I can't see in the front anymore. I had put some garbage cans in the hallway because I thought if they burst in, that'll slow them down. They'll like trip over the garbage cans and it gives us more time.
It's so Home Alone.
It's so Home Alone. So I hear a knock and I hear her say Minute Maid, which was the password. So I open the door and I pull her in and she's okay. And now we have a getaway car in the back and we're both hugging. I mean, I cannot get over how brave she was to do this to save both of us. And we come back to the front. And Christine, the car is gone. We thwarted the subway invaders. We outsmarted them. I'm sure they figured out we were onto them. And we both just then, you know, started laughing. We became silly. She was like, Kelly, you're going to throw meatballs at them, you know, with a spoon. What are you going to do with a spatula? What are you thinking? And I just couldn't believe that we outsmarted them. And then at that moment, Greg and Angela, they walk back in the store. And Angela's hair was a mess. Her shirt wasn't buttoned properly. She was more disheveled as usual. And it was very clear. She was looking at him adoringly. And it was really clear they had just hooked up. And not only that, she's still a Subway employee. He didn't fire her.
No, he couldn't fire her. He was sleeping with
her. Yes. And so Greg, as he always did when he was away from Subway, goes, Kelly, how was the shift? What happened? And normally I would have filled him in on all the Subway shenanigans. I just said, fine. And Autumn and I looked at each other and rolled our eyes. And I decided that Greg was no longer worthy of my stories.
Yeah.
I really, you know, there was a safe in his locked office. They could have had weapons. They could have hurt us because they may not have believed that we couldn't get in there. I really, for him to leave us alone, two 18-year-old girls at 10 o'clock at night with no keys, no access to a phone, so he could cheat on his wife, you know, with the worst employee in Subway's history. Just how this wasn't a good guy. I mean, I'd put him up on a pedestal and this was not a good guy at all. And I soon left Subway after that, actually. And it was never really the same with Greg.
It's so hard when you think you know somebody or you know something, especially when you're young like that. Because you're like, God damn it, why did I can't believe I was naive as somebody might tell me I am, but then I say, no, I'm not. I'm super smart. And then sure enough, I am.
Absolutely.
Ugh, it's the worst.
It is the worst. And I really just thought he was a good guy. And so it was a really powerful lesson on a lot of things. But even that and then to cheat on your
Oh, yeah.
Wife it's all with so Angela. Gross. So yeah. gross. Like it's the so grossest gross. Thing.
It's all so gross. You know, it actually reminds me of my first husband. He got another girl pregnant while we were married.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a true story. And the girl he got pregnant, she was like 14 years younger.
Oh.
I was 12 years younger. I thought I was the younger girl, but she was even younger. But the point is, when we found out who she was, my brother was like, oh my gosh, she was one of my employees at Pizza Hut, because my brother was a Pizza Hut manager, right?
Wow.
And he's like, one time at Pizza Hut, I let her alone at the store from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. And she said since nobody was coming, she locked up at 8 o'clock. And we missed the whole rush because she locked up. She left. She's right. such an idiot. And I'm like, well, that's who he just cheated on right. me with.
It wouldn't have even occurred to me to do for that reason. Like, I didn't want to get in trouble. We would have lost business and, you know.
Did it ever occur to you that maybe those kids out or those people in the parking lot were just like, you know, because I remember in those days, like, we would just go take somebody's car and hang out in the parking lot because there wasn't social media. There wasn't something to do. Do you really think they were going to?
I do. I mean, I still to this day, it's been 27 years.
Yeah.
Because when we kept looking, the intensity at which both of these men were staring at us.
Yeah.
I still believe to this day
wow.
their intent was to rob us.
Did you take the money out from under the ham and the lettuce yourself, or did you was Greg there when you took all that money out?
No, I put it back. I didn't even tell him what happened. Yeah. He never even learned how I saved Subway's money and stickers. Wow. I didn't even tell him what
happened.
Did you
ever give away those stickers to somebody just for fun? Or like, did you always keep strict accountability?
I met with Autumn after we left and she stole an entire roll of the stickers and she gave me some. So I myself used some of them to get some. I know, but I did not know, but she did. I never did. I took my Subway sandwich artist duties very seriously.
Apparently.
I kind of was like Hall Monitor Kelly. So no, I.
Well, you were very diligent.
I was. I
at
really
only
was.
18, you
I
must
know.
Have had a lot of guilt somewhere from your parents or something.
I really don't know. I mean, because people have asked, I mean, since I've been telling this story lately, people are like, why did you care about Subway so much?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the attention I got from Greg and feeling like I had to fill him in. Like, I don't know yeah. if I thought I was the assistant manager.
Yeah, you felt like you're the one in charge.
I felt like I was.
You're smarter than the other girl.
I did.
Autumn.
And so I just, it is silly that I took it that seriously because I should have just thrown the money out and we should have just walked out.
Yeah.
Or
when she came around with the car, you should have just gotten in the car.
And drove away. We should
drive
have.
Away. I mean.
It never occurred to me that I could leave Subway unattended. I mean, I really did not think I could do that.
Why did you use that password, Minuteman? What does that mean?
I think we had like Minute Maid Lemonade. I wish it was a cooler password.
Yeah.
But I think we literally, like we had Minute Maid Lemonade there. And I think we just were thinking of a word. It's not a cool password at all, but we had a feeling the robbers wouldn't say it. Like
yeah.
they wouldn't knock and whisper Minute Maid.
Yeah. I've worked in so many restaurants, like I said, and there were so many shenanigans going on
yes.
between managers and
I
waitresses,
know, always.
And cooks and bartenders.
Always.
I mean, I think that's why like that show Vanderpump Rules works
yes.
because it's like restaurant drama.
And now I know this. And now and being performers, bookers do this and the, you know, managers of club. So, but I didn't know I was 18.
Yeah.
It never would have occurred to me that a general manager would cheat on his wife with someone that's old enough to be his daughter. I mean, it just never occurred to me. I now know now because I've also worked at many restaurants and all of them cheated on their wives
they
with
all do.
Much younger servers. But
right.
It never even occurred to me. I mean, he just seemed like such a noble man to me.
Ugh.
I know.
I worked in this jazz club restaurant when I was in college. I was only 18, and 18, same age. And it was called Harper's, and it was in Pittsburgh. And it was kind of like this cool jazz, you know, place. And this guy, Walt Harper, ran it. And he had this, you know, suave sound, and this grand piano would be in the, you know, and he'd be playing it, my satin doll, and, you know, it would be very cabaret-ish and very cool. It was also very expensive, and I was a waitress there, and he would call me baby doll, because I was like the youngest waitress. Hey, baby doll, and I was like one of the only white people there, and he would just, it was so slimy, and I remember he'd call me back to his office, and there'd be like a wall that turned, and there was a bed, and it was just all so sleazy.
Oh.
And I remember being like 18 and thinking like, well, this is, this is hardcore reality.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
You don't have any kids, right?
I don't have any children.
Oh my God. I'm telling you, my mind is already, you know, my daughter, she's only 12.
But, I know.
You know, my mind just, I just want her to know what I know.
Right. I know. It's scary. I know. And it is that story. Just, I always thought I was a really smart girl. Yeah, and to see how naive I was.
Exactly. So like, what can I tell my daughter to say? Like, if you're in this circumstance, like, I just want her to not make mistakes on her own. I just want to tell her and then she'll know. And then those mistakes won't happen. But that's absurd.
It is, and you can't think of every scenario, unfortunately.
Right. So as a parent, I mean, we're just doing our best.
I know.
Just try to stay on top of it as long as I can. And then let's just hope she doesn't work in a subway that gets ripped off.
I know.
Why were you in Gainesville? Because you were going to school
I was there. I was in Tallahassee. Oh, I was at Florida State, so it's my first semester. And that was the other thing. Like, I couldn't wait to leave Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah. I couldn't wait to leave my home. And I just thought I was going to have all these, like, meet all these cool people and have all these important conversations. And I was with him. Like, it's what I thought adulthood was going to be like, where you talk about movies and music and politics. And, but yes, I was going to school at Florida State, and it literally was on campus, so I could walk from my dorm there to work.
Yeah. And well, as for as many, jerks like that, let's hope that there's others that are just that good of a, you know, a role model or a normal person. I mean, that was just one bad apple. Although I know what you're saying in terms of the industry, the restaurant bar industry.
I saw
industry.
It again and again and again, and I see it in comedy, unfortunately. And I see it. I'm a professor. Professors do it with their students. I would never, ever date a current or previous. I mean, and then when I see other professors that do, I mean, it just mortifies me. I can't even imagine.
I had a psych professor in college, and he would have everybody over to his place every Tuesday night. And I'm thinking,
there's
like,
no way I would do that.
This isn't right.
It's so inappropriate.
What do you teach?
Psychology.
Oh my gosh. Interesting. Yes. And what do you have a degree in psychology?
I do. From Florida State.
And so what kind of psychology do you teach?
So I teach at two community colleges here, and I taught for many years in Atlanta. So just all the different courses, actually. So I'm teaching research methods at two different colleges, and developmental psychology and intro psychology this semester. But I've taught abnormal psychology, cognitive psychology of women, just all of them. So
that's a lot. How about when I was in college, I had to take existential phenomenology.
Oh, wow.
Existential phenomenology of the Christian human person. Or something like that, because it was a Christian university. It was a Catholic university. Yes. My father worked there. We went tuition free. There was no question I was going to go there. But I picked psychology because I thought it sounded the most interesting. And maybe it is, but I don't know, man. I think I probably should have just done like liberal arts.
Oh, sure.
I don't know. Anyway, you are a fabulous storyteller. And
You
came on and shared the story because it's super funny.
Thank you for having me.
And you're doing such great work out here in LA. Really.
I really appreciate that.
Really. You're like keeping up the good fight.
Well, and thank
women.
You for providing opportunities. Your show at the Improv is amazing.
Thanks,
and you really go out of your way to provide opportunities for people.
That's very sweet of you. Nobody ever says that.
No, but it is appreciated. It's
being a producer can be a lonely job. I'll say that.
Yes.
No, but I get to meet all sorts of cool people, so it's all good. All right, you guys, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Make sure you tweet Kelly over there on Twitter at Kelly_Spillman, and also tweet me too over there at Storyworthy. And I want to thank the sponsors on the show today. And listen, you guys, if you didn't hear a sponsor, you're going to hear one next week. So support them. Because remember, when you support my sponsors, you are supporting me. Hooray! I also have a Patreon campaign going, and I have all different tiers, like giving away free show tickets, teaching you storytelling, you know, all that stuff. So check out patreon.com/storyworthy as well. All right, you guys, and on behalf of the very talented Kelly Spillman, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a storyworthy week.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.